All right, here we go. Are we ready?
Ready.
Welcome to M Vibes Podcast.
Home of good music,
good libations,
and good vibes.
Howdy ho, and welcome to another episode of M Vibes Podcast. All right. Season 4, episode 9. Thank you. Most time we really fucked that up. So, past three episodes, we got it right. But we flip-flopped two of them, so, yeah.
Oh, well. I had to put a little disclaimer in the bottom of the video on one.
I saw that out there, yeah. But we're back at home sweet home, Tommy's Pub. Of course, I'm drinking the usual Magners. And my good friend, Jameson. What are you drinking, Ernest?
I actually got something new here. This is the Natural Hop-A-Tap Belgian IPA from Pilot Brewing.
Oh.
And I think this is for their one of their charities.
Okay.
Charlotte Wildlife.
Huh. That's cool. We have a special guest today on the show, Dylan from Noble Records.
Oh, I think I have Jameson, too.
Yes, you do, because I got you a shot of Jameson.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, cheers.
Cheers.
Salud. Dylan, what are you drinking today, sir?
I'm drinking some black coffee from home.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I drink coffee a lot. So I make it a lot from home and take it around from wherever I'm going, but mostly drink black coffee and water.
Yeah.
It's my main thing. I'm laying like that.
You're probably healthier that way, though.
What's your favorite roast of coffee?
I don't know, man. My wife buys it. I just make it. I think it's like a, you know, with the dark roast.
Okay.
I think it burns some of the cat. I don't know, man. I'm really talking about my butt, but, I usually like if I'm getting it, my wife buys it and puts it in a big jar in the kitchen and then I make it. So don't ask me.
For me. I'm a big fan of Black Rifle coffee.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, they got some excellent coffee.
Have you tried that Death Wish coffee?
No,
I haven't tried that.
I have. I drank it. I was in Myrtle Beach, and I forget where I even got the damn can from, but I drank it one day before we went out on the beach, and my kids were just laughing in hysterics. They were like, "Dad, you are crazy today." I'm like, "Don't worry, it'll wear off soon."
That sounds nice.
I was wired, man. Yeah, it's like 1,000 times stronger than like a Red Bull, but there's like a warning on the can and all that stuff. It is, however, organic.
Okay. Huh.
Yeah. Anyways,
that's good.
Yeah, I love coffee.
Yeah,
when it's cold outside. When it's hot outside, I do HVAC work, so
yeah,
I'm always outside working on a roof, drinking a hot coffee when the sun's beaming down out of you.
Right. I feel like HVAC work is kind of one of those, you know, like if you know a police officer, anytime you like, you know, get a ticket or you got trouble with the law, that's the only time you call him. You know, HVAC guy. The only time you really call him is like, dude, my air conditioning ain't working right. What's going on? You know, there's a few people, you know, a lawyer, you know, well, how do I get out of this thing? Whatever.
I get calls from people I haven't talked to in years, and I'm like, shit.
Yeah, I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. Who does your maintenance over at Noble Records?
I don't know. Man, the units were like 25 years old when we moved in. And then last year, the only one we had, just went out. And so we had to get it replaced.
Yeah.
Sucked. But anyways, we're good now. So, but if we have any trouble,
call me.
I'll holla, for sure.
We can trade records for HVAC.
That sounds good.
Repairs. Anyways, so Noble Records, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast is because, along with myself, I know a lot of listeners are into the hobby of buying vinyl.
Good.
We spend a lot of money on it. We hunt around. We have like, what, 4 or 5 spots here in town we can go buy vinyl. Noble's in Matthews, and then you got Hardy Boys not too far from you.
Yep.
And then we got Lunchbox, Repo, and Premium Sound. Those are the 5 I can think of. And then there's the Poets Vault.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And, That's a cool, cool spot.
And there's revolvers up like McAdenville area.
Oh, and Spookies.
Spookies, exactly. Yeah, I was going to say that one too.
Spookies is cool, man.
There's little spots everywhere now. Yeah. It's nice.
I found some gold mines at Spookies, though, man.
I need to go up there, man. It's just I'm always at the shop on the weekends, and that's when they're open. So I need to go up there.
Yeah. Anyways, so give us some history of you and how you got into selling records, man.
Well, got married young. I was 21 and had about 1,000 records that I had amassed from my childhood of just going around to yard sales and thrift stores and flea markets and stuff and buying just like classic rock records that I liked. And when I got married, I kind of went a little bit minimal for a while and, you know, had a tiny apartment. We were broke, you know. I was making like $1,000 a month just trying to sell some things off. So I sold off my record collection and immediately regretted it. You know,
I hear that from a lot of people.
Yeah, it was bad. I was like, man, what did I do? So then I started kind of wanting to buy more, but I didn't really have any money. So I was like, well, I'll buy a little collection here and there and kind of keep the ones I want, sell the ones I don't want, and kind of start it. So that started in 2010. And then, you know, maybe I was maybe a year into that, and I got this, like, mother load of a collection. It was like once in a lifetime. Incredible collection, and kind of lived off of that collection for a couple of years, honestly, trying to, like, I used that as time to figure out what I was doing, and, like, I learned about a ton of stuff I had no idea about, you know, at the time. And so so it originally started on eBay. I did eBay for probably 5 or 6 years, and then I went in and out of it a lot. I worked a lot of jobs, a lot of, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, really. I did, like, you know, graphic design to landscaping to... I worked in a glass factory. I mean, I got a laundry list of jobs that I did.
Was it Cardinal Glass done in?
No, it was like fiber optic. It was a fiber optic plant, okay, so it was not. It was glass, but not really. But okay. Yeah, it is glass. Yeah. Anyways, so did that for a while, and then ended up losing my job in 2019. And I was like, screw it, I'm just gonna sell everything I have and open a record store. So sold a bunch of my guitars that were kind of expensive, but we didn't take any loans. I started with $1,000. And sold pretty much my whole collection, like, to open the shop. I sold some of my heavier stuff at first just to kind of get some seed money going, and then I pretty much put my whole collection in the shop along with the inventory that I had. We were doing pop-ups before that, you know.
Yeah.
And I think I met you then.
That's probably where we met, yeah.
So that was probably 2017, 18, something like that. I was going around doing...
Ernest almost wore his mic over there, sorry.
Anyways, so I go around to breweries, coffee shops, stuff like that, and just set up and sell. And then that kind of got me a loose customer base in the area to where when I opened a shop, they were like, oh, yeah, that's that dude, you know, that's bringing stuff around. So it's kind of nice to not have to carry it around anymore. But 2019, we opened for 5 months. Then we had to shut down for, you know, in 2020, we had to shut
fucking
down for
COVID.
Like,
sorry.
Like 4 months, you know. And then after that, we opened back up, and it's been pretty good since then. So
awesome.
Yeah, can't complain.
Yeah, I used to go to a lot of your pop-ups.
Divine Barrel.
Divine Barrel, Lenny Boy, yeah.
Yeah.
I bought my first Beatles record from you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Rubber Souls, yeah.
That's a good one.
And then I also bought my favorite Black Sabbath album from you, Bloody Sabbath.
Okay.
I love that fucking record, man.
Yeah. They didn't make many bad ones.
No.
You know?
Black Sabbath, to me, are the gods of heavy metal. Absolutely. Hands down.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I can't argue with you.
Yeah. There we go. How about some Black Sabbath, guys? From UN, D.C. Used to be a big Howard Stern fan, so.
Okay.
Actually, ever since COVID, I stopped listening to him. So, because he's started doing his broadcast from home, and it just sucked.
Okay.
And I never got back into it again. So, oh well.
Yeah, I've never been much of a listener of that. I don't know, but
it was very entertaining. The best thing about him was his interviews. So when he got like a special guest on there, he was a king of interviews. Do you remember your first record that you bought?
Yes. So, I first wanted to get into records, and I went to Goodwill with my mom. I was 10. And I was like, I don't know what to buy. I didn't know what anything was. Mm-hmm. And me and my mom were looking through the records, and we found a 45. It was Don McLean, American Pie. Was it?
Oh, nice.
And she's like, you'll like this song. You'll know this when you'll like it. And so, like, our church had a library, and they had a, like, portable, one of those, like, school, like, yes, a Caliphone, like, portable record players. And they're like, we don't use this anymore. This is in the 90s. They were obsolete by then. They're like, you can just have this. So that was the turntable I was using. And so I took that home and listened to it 1,000 times. And then I went out, you know, maybe a few weeks later and found REO Speedwagon, High Infidelity, and Styx Cornerstone, and I listened to those 1,000 times. Super lame out. I listened to them recently, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is terrible." But I mean, you know,
it's rock and roll though, man.
Yeah. But you know, it's sentimental to me because I listened to it so many times it brings me back then. But yeah. But then after that, I think I found a copy of Physical Graffiti, and so it was over after that. Yeah. I was really into Zeppelin. Still am.
I love Zeppelin. We were talking earlier before the podcast. I'm bummed I missed that Alison Krauss, Robert Plant show. I heard through the grapevine that they did a lot of Zeppelin songs.
They did. It was nice.
Were you there?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
damn it.
So it was. So they canceled the one in Charlotte. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what was going on. So I got tickets for Charlotte, and I don't go to a lot of concerts anymore. I'm old and lame, and I just don't do it. When I was a kid, I went all the time, and I saw pretty much anybody I'd want to see. But I was like, I want to go to that one. And so I got the tickets, and then they canceled it, and I was like, ah, screw it. Wasn't meant to be, whatever. And then my friend's like a mega fan, and he'll go to all kinds of shows. He's like, why don't we go up to Asheville? They're doing it in Asheville.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we go up there? And I was like, I don't really want to. But, yeah, I need to go up to Asheville to run some errands. I'll do it. I'll make a day of it. Went up there, and, dude, it was amazing. It was really good.
What was the venue they played at?
It used to be called the Civic Center. It's that main one downtown. I can't remember what they called it this time. But it was good. It was like kind of a small venue, really laid back. But they did Gallows Pole, which I don't think that I'd never heard them do before. They did Battle of Evermore. They did Black Dog. Black Dog they did. It was like a Irish folk mixed in with like rockabilly type feel. It was wild, dude.
Wow.
I'll show you some videos or send you some. I took videos of a lot of it, but
sweet. Okay.
And then they did a couple other ones, but they did When the Levee Breaks, and that was killer. So they did it was really good. A lot of Alison Krauss and Robert Plant crossover stuff, but most of it was like a real strong Robert Plant lead. I guess he's like heading it, but anyways, it was good. It was really good. And the only reason I went is because Ozzy, you know, he retired. And I was like, dang it. Robert Plant, this could be his last tour. I don't know.
Right.
You know,
how did he sound?
Oh, he sounded amazing.
Yeah.
And he was doing the stuff, you know, stuff. turned on his mojo.
I've seen Ozzy 4 or 5 times. I also saw him with Black Sabbath.
So wow.
I'm glad I got to hear War Pigs with the original band. That was awesome. That was at a Ozfest. Years ago, a long, long time ago, I was spoiled. We were broke. I had no money. We didn't eat food. We just drank water all day long, but we went to fucking Ozfest and enjoyed our day, man.
You wouldn't have remembered that food, but you remembered the guy. Yeah.
We didn't eat anything, yeah.
Yeah.
Great show, though. I think we went to every Ozfest for like 6 years, and then all of a sudden they stopped doing it, and like the last three they did, like the lineups really sucked. So we just, oh well. Anyways,
yeah.
That was the new metal time when metal was getting big again. So.
Yeah. So, but Zeppelin, to go back, I kind of got obsessed with them when I was young. I don't know. I think my dad, what started it was my dad. He was a Baptist pastor, and he had this whole thing with backward masking. So, you know what that...
I don't.
Okay, this is great.
Ernest does.
You know about it. You just don't know what that is called.
Okay.
Backwards masking
is when you turn a song backwards, and it has a secret
message. Yeah.
So the theory was you turn the song backwards, and it's got this secret message that when it enters your brain, if it's forwards, you know, hey, I don't want to worship Satan. That's wrong. Kick that out. But if it goes past your subconscious and goes in your brain, then it can corrupt your inner brain, I guess.
Hail Satan.
Yeah, right, yes. And then you're listening to this and you don't even know it. So yeah.
I guess that's what happened to me.
So there was all these songs that you turn backwards, like You turn back, another one bites the dust, and it says it tells you to smoke marijuana. And then, which, I mean, a lot of people do, so probably worked. But anyways, Led Zeppelin, Stairway to Heaven was one big one. It was like the main one. And so he had this cassette tape, and it would go through all the songs. It would play them forward and then play them backwards. And he's like, you need to listen to this. And it's going to, he thought it was going to scare me, I guess. And I was like,
that's cool.
This is cool. And so he caught me. I learned how to play Stairway to Heaven backwards on guitar because I thought it sounded cool.
No
and
shit.
And he was like, what? This backfired terribly. And so
that's awesome.
Yeah. So he didn't care for that. But anyway, but after that, I was kind of like obsessed with Led Zeppelin and just like wanted to collect all their records. And I remember I finally got them all. And this was like when eBay was kind of in its infancy. And I was like, man, I finally got them all. And my friend's like, I'm going to go on eBay and try to find some. And he pulls up Led Zeppelin records on eBay. And then we see the bootlegs. And I didn't even know that bootlegs existed.
No.
And I was like, he's like, ha ha, you'll never have them all. And I was like, you freaking watch me. So now I've got like, dude, I got like 300 Led Zeppelin records. I got like tons of bootlegs.
You know? I've seen you on Whatnot in your own personal house. And your collection behind you is amazing.
It's absurd. But yeah, I try to keep it high tight. I'm pretty picky on what I bring home because like, we buy on average probably 1,000 records a week. And so, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there that I think is cool. But
just so that you know, it's in my will. If my kids don't want my vinyl, they go to Noble Records.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah. But I hope it doesn't come to that. Yeah. Hopefully, I'm a very old man when that happens. I have so much cool stuff now. So much cool stuff comes through that I really only keep a few things here and there, but that adds up, you know, obviously.
What's the most expensive one you've got in your shop now?
In the shop? Trying to remember. I got some jazz records on the wall that are like north of $500.
Really?
You know, but I got some, you know, some regular stuff between $100 and $300, some, you know, original Stooges stuff. I got that Stooges, their first record, the first press, like the very first press when they forgot to put the Stooges text on the label. Mm-hmm. It's like the first of the first. I got one of those on the wall. It's pretty cool. I don't know. I got a bunch of crazy stuff in there. So
how often do people bring you in stuff and not know?
Every day.
Not know what they have? Or think that their shit's worth $1 million.
That's more common. Yeah. So a lot of times people bring stuff in and they'll have like sticky notes on everything. So they're like, I looked this up online and this Billy Joel Records is worth $65 or whatever, you know, and you're like, nah, dude, that's not. You got to look at the sold prices on eBay. And so I'll pull that up and kind of show them. And then most of the time they're like, oh, you know. And if they get too like belligerent about it, I'm like, yeah, you just keep it. It's fine.
Yeah.
But notorious story is one time this lady comes in with a briefcase and it's like one of these like titanium looking briefcases and she puts it on the counter and she opens it up and she pulls out some like white cotton gloves and she puts them on and she reaches in and she pulls out Michael Jackson Thriller. And she says, this that I hold in my hands is an original Michael Jackson Thriller. I'm like, all right.
There's lots of those.
And she's like, what are you giving for it? And I'm like, $5. I mean, you know, and she's like, she's like, this is worth, I need to get $12,000 for this. I was like, you know, you really, that's a stretch, you know. That's like a $12 record, you know. I mean, maybe 15. And she was like, no, this was an original. And when that happens, you really try to be nice.
Yeah.
Because you're about to break their heart. And you just say, hey, you know, that's platinum. That's a platinum record. That's like one of the best-selling records of all time.
There's
hundreds of thousands of these, millions of these. I had four of them, like, on the shelf right there for anywhere between $10 to $15, depending on condition. And she was just so shocked, and she was like, those aren't original. And then she was kind of in denial, and she left. But that's kind of the funniest story of when that happens. But, like, a lot of times people will bring stuff in, and they not know what it is. And I try to just be above board with everybody, you know. You know, we obviously need to make money. But, like, for instance, this guy comes in one time. This is a cool one. He has a stack of jazz records, and they're all garbage, terrible condition, terrible titles, nothing I would even want. Right in the middle is a first press Hank Mobley, a Soul Station, which is like $1,000 easy, maybe $2,000. I mean, this one was mint right in the middle.
Wow.
And I'm like, this dude has no clue that this is in here. He has no idea what this is. There's no way. I could get this for like $5 if I wanted it. But I just was like, you know, when that happens, I just like, you know, how would I want my stuff to be treated? And I'm just like, no. And I told him, I was like, hey, this is a really good record. And I gave him a lot for that record. And he was like, you know what? He said, my dad was this like incredible jazz collector back in the day. And I can't find an honest record store in the area. And I've done this everywhere. And you're the only one who's actually pulled that out and given me good money for it. So I'll let you buy the rest of it. So I went to his house, and he had the most insane jazz collection I've ever seen. And he said that he couldn't find anybody that would, like, you know, give him enough for it. So I don't know if that's true. I don't know if he went anywhere else. I know a lot of the other stores in the area are really reputable, and they do a really good job. I don't know where he went. He said he talked to a bunch of other dealers. So it probably wasn't stores, but he said he'd had people over at his house before, and they lowballed him. So it was, like, the most incredible jazz collection I'd ever seen in my life. And, you know, karma. So good things come around if you treat people well, and so we try to do that.
I'm a big believer in karma. Yeah. Did anyone notice the guy who just walked by with a Seal shirt on? That was pretty dope. I've never seen a Seal shirt before.
Like a
squirrel.
Squirrel.
But yeah, so we get a lot of people bring it in. We also go out and pick up collections places. We, you know, we just drove to Florida a few months ago and got a pretty incredible collection. So,
oh, Dave Brubeck, right? Take Five, isn't it?
No,
it's not. I'm sorry. No, this is This is hey man, nice shirt. Is that Seal? Is that a Seal T-shirt? Yeah, it's awesome. That's awesome.
I thought you were talking about like a seal.
No, like
it's that, like a beach ball, like an animal.
No,
okay,
sorry.
But anyway, so yeah, we do a lot of that, and let's see what I was going with. Yeah, we went to Florida, got a jazz collection in Florida, drove it back. That was kind of wild, but we kind of go all over and try to get good stuff. But we do the shop. We recently started a record label. So that's pretty cool.
Now, you have put out two, at least to my knowledge, two reissues that were exclusive to your shop, right?
Right. So what we do with that, we've done about 10 of them.
Okay. All
right. So, so what we do is it's kind of how it started was, started with my podcast, actually. I had, there's this guy named Randy Holden, and he's a guitar player. You ever heard the band Blue Cheer?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he played in Blue Cheer for a little bit, and he's just this out of this world, really heavy guitar. They say he's the father of stoner doom type of music. Like, his guitar riffs are insane. So so he put out this really rare record, supposedly only 88 original copies. And it was like my holy grail forever. I looked for it forever. Could never find it. Nobody ever even heard of it. And so I ended up tracking him down, and is that you, Randy Holden? Yeah. He's amazing. So anyways, ended up finding him, getting him on my podcast. And he was like, yeah, that's Blue Cheer. So he wasn't in that iteration of Blue Cheer. He was in another one. He was on the band New Improved. Anyways, this is all nerd stuff. But
we're all nerds on this podcast, yeah, man. So.
Look up Randy Holden Population.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. So anyways, so I found him. Had him on my podcast, and I was like, you know, would you ever want to reissue this thing? And he's like, yeah, I'd love to. But at that time, like, I didn't have any money or any idea how to do it. So I was like, you know, I got a friend, and he's a really good buddy of mine. He's like, all the 70s record executives were all real snaky. Screw everybody over. You didn't get any money. So he'd been screwed over by a lot of like record executives. And so I said, this guy's honest. And his label is Riding Easy Records. I've probably heard of it. He does all the brown acid stuff. So I introduced them, and he ended up getting to do the Randy Holden record, which was huge. It was amazing. And he let me do an exclusive. So I did, I think, 200 copies on yellow vinyl, you know, that you could only get from us. And so he did the rest of them. So after that, you know, I did a couple more with him. There he is. Label in Spain called Garrison Records, and I do a lot with them. They do really high quality stuff, that same like obscure hard rock stuff from the 70s. And then there's another label called Ancient Greece that does that too. And so anyways, out of working all these labels and kind of figuring out all that stuff worked, I was like, yeah, I think I want to start a label. And so been thinking about it for a couple years.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how to put a record on vinyl. I had no idea how to do that. You know, where do you even start? You know,
where do you start? Who do you even talk to?
Yeah. So, I kind of was asking around and go back to my friend Daniel at Ride and Easy at that label that did the Randy Holden release. He was like, "Dude, I'll walk you through it," and he was totally forthcoming and genuine with me, and we've been good friends. But he's given me a lot of good tips and like kind of walked me through the process of telling me how to do it, which is golden. It's hard, you know. You get into a field.
Yeah.
And people are real protective over the information because they think if you figure out how to do this, you're going to do it. And I'm going to get, it's like the famine mentality that there's not enough for everybody. So, anyways, so he's been really cool about it. Really good friend of mine now. And he's helped me out a lot to figure it out. So I found a record in Monroe. It's called Underground Fire. And no one's ever heard of it. But it's this, it's this record. It's this underground garage rock record that's never been heard. No one knows who it is. You can't listen to it online. There's no rips of it anywhere. There was only really a few hundred copies ever released. And a friend of mine found one at a yard sale like 2 or 3 years ago, and he brought it in. He's like, "You know what this is?" And I was like, "No, I've never seen it in my life." I mean, to be local and be psychedelic rock that I don't know about, that's like crazy.
Yeah.
So, because that's like my favorite thing, and I've really tried to find all that stuff. So anyways, put it on in the shop, listened to it. I was blown away. So I looked for another copy forever, finally found like a really clean copy, and I found the guy that wrote all the songs, and he lived 10 minutes from the shop.
Wow.
So I called him, and I was like, "Hey, dude, you want to put this record out?" And he's like, "Yeah." And so he came to the shop, and we came to terms. He signed a contract, and so that's kind of be our first release. I've not told anybody that yet, but anyways, I think anybody that follows me probably can figure that out.
Exclusive.
Exclusive. I was getting ready to say the same. Exclusive right here.
So anyways, that's going to be our first release, but we haven't put it up on streaming or anything like that yet. We like this week they should finish the masters. So like I have this audio engineer that's mastering everything, and he should finish this week and we'll be able to get up on streaming, and then we'll kind of announce it and pump it up. But it's just really cool. It's a record no one's ever heard before. Really, most people know her before, and kind of resurfacing that stuff's kind of what I want the label to be about. So that's really cool. So that was the first one. And then we have a few more. Today we signed two contracts for two different albums.
Oh, wow.
So we've got five contracts signed. So now, you know, for five different records. So that'll line up. Probably the first ones will start coming out later this year, early next year. And so
are they all going to be colored vinyl, or are they going to be just
Yeah, we'll
black
do
vinyl?
That. Like so what we'll do is like so with the exclusives, we started with like doing 200. We did 200 one time, 100 another time. But see, now like a lot of the pressing plants won't let you do that. They won't let you do just 100.
Oh, really?
You got to do like 500.
Oh.
It's like some of them have a minimum of 300. Some of them have a minimum of 500. Usually it's 500. It's like a specific color.
Talk and to Jeff Clayton from Anti-Scene. He has
you can do
his
small.
Shit pressed all the time, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. There's little plants, but the plants that we use, like RTI and stuff, they won't let you do that crap. So anyways, I don't know. So I started doing – so when I'd put them up, they'd sell out immediately, like an hour or two.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, all right, well, we'll just screw it. We'll do some more. And so I got up to where, like when we did that farm record – I don't know if you've ever seen that farm record.
Was that the one that was pink?
No. We don't have a pink one. I don't think.
I swore you had a pink one.
I had a red one.
Red was red.
Elias
I'm sorry.
Hulk. It's close. So
Chris red is close to pink. Pink, whatever.
Yeah. So anyways, the farm record, we did three different exclusives of it. We did 300 three times, and they all sold out as soon as we put them up. So
wow.
I was like, I did one a few months ago. It was called Orangutan, and it's like a killer hard rock record, and we did 1,000 of those, and they all sold out. So I was like,
"Jesus,
I think the label might work." You know, so so with the label, we'll do probably like 1,000 on different colored vinyl. You know, probably do like a real limited splatter, and then different colors, and then maybe 500 on black vinyl, and then you know, so we'll do like 1,500 or so. So that's what we're. It depends on the record. It depends on if I think there'll be enough of a market for it. You know, the cover has to be right. It has to have a certain sound to it. So anyways, but I'm figuring all that stuff out. I don't really know what I'm doing. So I'm learning a lot from friends of mine that are forthcoming with wisdom and knowledge and helping me out. So
the fruit flies are here. There it is. Get off it. Get off.
Hey, you know, sometimes the best learning is doing it.
Yeah.
That's the way I've done everything. When I opened the shop, I didn't know what I was doing, and I started it with nothing and just kind of snowballed it. So that's kind of
every time
I
stop
it.
In your shop, I spend. There are two sections I always go to first: the new arrivals, then three, the punk section, and then the old school hip hop section, and then I mosey around.
Right,
I always find something good though.
Yeah, I just hired a full time guy named Logan. He's awesome, and he is like. I don't really care for, in the past, I haven't cared for new vinyl very much. I usually do, most of my stuff's used in record collections and stuff. Yeah. But he, like, is more geared towards that. So he's, like, keeping everything really sexy. If you haven't been in a while, a lot's changed.
I haven't been in a while, no.
Okay, yeah, you need to come back in. We've got a lot of killer stuff, and we've got a huge punk section, metal section.
Awesome.
A lot more of that stuff. And so he keeps that stuff restocked. And so
used or new?
Both. But mostly, like, he's got a lot of the new stuff that I don't care about. It's just like I've always just tried to do what I want to do, and that works sometimes. But then there's a lot of people that come in and they're like, "You don't have any Taylor Swift records, seriously?" And I'm like,
"You kind of have to step outside." That's what I was talking about earlier about buying vinyl that I wouldn't normally buy, but I know I have to have to go spend for gigs.
You have to do that for DJing,
right? I refused for years to buy anything Nirvana, but I have a 90s gig coming up. And I don't own Nevermind.
Yeah.
I got to have it. So I got to buy it. I can't. Yeah. I've not found it used anywhere. So I gotta buy it.
Yeah.
Played a lot of shit that bucks. I didn't want to back when I was a DJ.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all right.
Well, you know, it is what it is. But so that's kind of what we got going on. The shop and the label. And but yeah, we've been buying a lot of collections. We just bought a storage unit full. It was like 4,000 records, and that's
what do you do when you walk in? You're like, oh, it's gonna be cool, or you're like, god damn, there's a lot of shit to go through.
Yeah, I mean, it's always like there's the really cool stuff, and then you pick all that stuff out, and then you're like, all right, there's a bunch of like 20 Phil Collins records in here. We gotta, you know. Yeah. So this guy had an old booth at a flea market, and so he had like everything alphabetized, everything organized.
Oh,
and
nice.
Had, like, 50 Pink Floyd records, like 30 Led Zeppelin records. Mm-hmm. He had like all the stuff, all alphabetized stuff, but he had like, you know, probably 30, 40 Billy Joel records or whatever. And then this stuff you get all the time, but people buy it. So it's just, it's part of it. So it's a lot of, we had to just kind of mill through this and price all this stuff out. But then it's cool. You found a lot of really cool stuff.
I found a bunch of YouTube singles once at your store. My wife and I love U2. A lot of people don't. I love U2 and my wife. We've seen them two or three times live. But you always find the unforgettable fire in every record store you go to.
It's a great record, but it's just, it doesn't sell for hardly anything because it's just everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Wait, did y'all see that chick that had the Abari shirt on?
No, I didn't. Hey, but that's like a local bar in town. You don't see a person walking around with a Seal shirt on too often. Sorry.
You guys should just do a podcast where you just sit out in public somewhere and call out t-shirts that you see.
Sorry, I had to do my own squirrel moment.
Squirrel, sorry.
But yeah, so I can't remember where we're going with that. But records, yeah.
Lots of records.
Records, yeah. So,
like Eric says, sorry.
Sorry.
Records are, you know, kind of, I don't know. The way I've collected them has changed a lot over the years, but like now, I like to find things that I love going through a collection and find something I had no idea it existed, you know, or like I had no idea this person played on this record or whatever. And it's all nerd rabbit holes you get down to, but there's a lot. I mean, if I go through a punk, like if I buy a punk collection and I get a bunch of punk stuff, I'm just like only listening to punk for like a month, you know, and I'm going through all the stuff and really enjoying it, and then
it'll awesome.
A jazz collection, and then I'll be really into that. So kind of got to be well-rounded in what you know, and I'm still pretty young at this, I guess. I mean, I've been doing it for a while. Like, I've been collecting since I was 10, and I'm 35. So 25 years, I guess. But still, 35. You know, there's always a lot of room to learn. And
why do we keep having all these young guys on
the – You asked me the same thing. When the hell did I become so old?
Yeah. It's all right, though.
Yeah, well –
I'm still hip with my battle vest on, man. Come on.
Oh, yeah. I need to get me a vest. Yeah. I don't know if I can pull one off.
Are you going to go to Parliament and Fishbone?
When is that?
Next month at the Fillmore.
Yeah, I don't know. Sounds good to me. I need to check that out. Yeah. I've not seen Parliament.
You keep saying that Fishbone is opening for
They are. They're fucking opening for
him. There's nothing that says that anywhere I can find, but...
Yes, there is. I'll show it to you after the podcast.
But Fishbone is playing in Charleston the next night, so they are in the area.
Fishbone's opening for Parliament that night at the Fillmore.
It's not the only thing that Fishbone has put out.
No, it's all Parliament saying. It's on the Fillmore site, dude. It's on there. I'll show it to you later.
I didn't see that either.
How would Parliament not headline that show?
They are.
I mean, I know some. They have to be.
Fishbone's opening for
them. They got to be.
Open.
Yeah. They got to be. Anyways.
Squirrel again.
I love Parliament. I love Funkadelic. I love
it.
All that stuff, man.
It's on my vest. I mean, it's all these metal bands, and then there's like Parliament, right?
Yeah.
I love it.
Have you ever heard Eddie Hazel? His record, that's a freaking killer. He's an amazing guitar player. But, yeah, I love all that stuff. The funk rock, the funky, anything with funk, anything, you know. But I'm, you know, in this, I find so many things and listen to so many things. When it comes to jazz, I love jazz, funk, all that stuff. So I got pretty wide tolerance for music.
Is there any, do you ever get, like, someone famous that comes into your shop? And you're like, oh, shit. He
never,
was here.
Never. No. I have never had a famous person in my shop because our store's not near any venues. Lunchbox has some people coming in there because they are, you know, in the area. But I never have ever had anybody famous. We're too far out. But when I worked at Guitar Center, when I was in high school, I worked at Guitar Center. And one day I skipped. I was hanging out with my girlfriend, which is my wife now. And I called in sick, and Slash came in that day.
Ah!
Yeah, that one stings a little. But anyway, I didn't marry Slash, so.
No, when I used to work at Media Play, we had a lot of famous people come in. We had Kirk Hammett from Metallica came in. I'll never forget. He bought Monster Magnet, Frank Sinatra. Oh shit! What was the third one he bought?
Milli Vanilli.
No. I forget. I'm sorry. The third one he bought, but
Kenny G.
He was cool. He Kenny G.
Seal.
Kenny G.
That was funny.
Went to college here in town at Johnson.
Have you seen that Kenny G. documentary on HBO?
No, I haven't.
It's amazing. It's about how he knows everybody hates him, but he doesn't care because he's so rich. It is awesome. I highly
fuck
recommend
you guys.
I can't remember what it's called, but it's about Kenny G, and he's like very aware that everybody makes fun of him, and he could not care less, which is cool.
That's awesome.
But it talks about how like his name's Kenny Gorelick, and he played in all these jazz fusion bands and stuff. It's pretty cool before he was ever famous. And anyways, that's down the Kenny G rabbit hole.
That's not Kenny G.
No, it's not. I'm a little bit behind.
Well, that's some songbird up in here. We need some songbird. It's Kenny G songbird.
We need some flutes. No.
But anyways.
No,
I decided to play Slash instead.
Yeah.
There we go.
Slash is awesome. Slash, I'm going to be honest. G and I are going to be in town next month. I've never seen him. I know Axl Rose's voice is not what it used to be. I've seen Slash with Niles Kennedy.
Uh-huh.
Niles Kennedy blows Axl Rose out of the fucking water. And I've seen him do Guns N' Roses songs with Slash at least,
love Miles Kennedy.
At least two or three times. Oh my God, that dude's voice is amazing.
Yeah.
He's the lead singer for Alter Bridge, isn't it? Yeah. But man,
that's correct.
That dude's voice is amazing. He kills it. And if I don't see Guns N' Roses, I'll consider that my Guns N' Roses show. So I'm not paying $300 to go sit in nosebleeds to go see Axl Rose.
It is hard to hold a can. I think I could probably do Axl Rose just as good as he can. He struggles, man. It's hard to watch.
He looks rough too, man.
Yeah, he looks like he's had some bad plastic surgery. Here we go.
Here we go. We need to dim down these lights, Ernest.
Oh, no, I'm feeling a little uncomfortable. I said it, but I didn't mean it.
It's okay.
I'm joking.
I'm only gay around people that are gay with me, so sorry.
Oh, man. And so, we were talking about...
It's so like, cracking me up.
Like, you know, that's like all these jazz musicians that hate Kenny G. Yeah. What's his name? Oh my God,
Ernest. Pat, you're fucking killing me.
Pat Metheny was on there, and he was talking about Kenny G. Like he hated his guts, but it's not really jazz. It's like pop with a saxophone. It's not jazz. I mean, I don't think it's jazz. Anyways.
It's like elevator music, kind of.
Right. It's like if you were to play, well, never, that's a bad example. Anyways, but yeah, so.
It's one of those things I had to play back when I was a DJ.
Yeah.
I had a wedding reception.
Every time I DJed, I would play that before dinner. And then I started, like, getting into, like, blues and other obscure, weird things that were as chill as that, and I started playing that. I stopped playing Kenny G after a while.
Oh, yeah. There's, like, a whole genre of, like, lounge that is, like, got some really funky stuff, but it's low-key, and you could be hearing it and be like, okay, but it's, like, private press, rare stuff, so that's a whole thing people collect, too. There's one called Lemuria that's really good, but I don't even think you can stream that. But anyways,
do you sell cassette tapes too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
People don't bring them in much for some reason, but like
are those really back or no?
Yeah. I mean, people buy them all the time. They buy them more than I get them. I mean,
really?
Yeah.
Wow. Actually, people are starting to release cassettes again.
Yeah. Jeremy Radio. He's got cassettes.
Yep, yeah, sure did.
So did the Van Huskins. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's
I wish I'd held on to all those.
Well, when we had the De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising, it came out. They finally re-released it, finally. And we got some cassettes of that, which is weird. You know, like $20. It's
all
crazy.
The cassettes
I'm not paying $20 for a tape.
All the cassettes I had back in the day were recorded in that old, everything was very tinny.
Yes.
So that's why everything's been remastered today. So the cassettes really sounded like crap.
You know, and I didn't realize until recently, a lot of bands remaster their albums so they get the rights back to that shit. I didn't know that.
Well, the reason with De La Soul was that they had all those samples
Tommy Boy. Yeah,
you know, they couldn't get the rights. I don't know how they ended up doing it, but
I found an original pressing at like the fuck's that store called?
Walmart.
No. Salvation Army.
Oh, yeah.
Years ago. I'm like, wow. That's amazing. Someone bought it for like a dollar. It's awesome. Yeah.
Incredible.
However, me, myself, and I, that track has been worn out on that record. Yeah. De La Soul, rest in peace, Dave. Sorry. I did miss that LL Cool J show that just came through town with De La Soul. I completely forgot about it. And I was driving somewhere, and I'm like, oh shit, that was last night. Damn it, I forgot about it because I told my daughter I was gonna take it to it. She loves hip hop, but she likes like newer stuff. So I was like, all right, I'll take you to one of your shows. She wants to go see it. I can't even tell you who the fuck his name is, but it's terrible. But man, I'm like, if you go to a rap show with me, I'll go to a rap show with you. So I was gonna take her to go see it was LL. It was funny. I was playing her Juvenile. She goes, oh, I know this song. Back that ass up. I'm like, shh.
It's funny. Did you see that Juvenile Tiny Desk concert?
No.
Oh, my God, dude. You have to go watch that. Like, we need to stop the podcast and watch it. It's
really?
It is unreal. It's amazing.
Juvenile?
Yes. It's
Tiny
amazing.
Desk.
Yes.
Okay.
Am I wrong? Did that happen? You need to go watch it. I think maybe I dreamed it, but
what is that on?
It's on YouTube. But yeah, they did this incredible Tiny Desk. Yeah, I know that I'm right. Why am I even looking at it?
Wait, what do you mean Tiny Desk? Was it filmed not on a desk?
It was NPR Tiny Desk. You ever seen these concerts?
No.
Okay, so NPR has these like concerts, and they'll have like hip hop guys that have a whole band. And so Juvenile's doing his whole set with a full band.
No shit.
Dude, you gotta watch it, man. Right, it's amazing.
Yeah. I will check it out. Yeah.
So like Mac Miller did one right before he died, and it's got like hundreds of millions of views because it's so good. The whole band, like Thundercats playing bass.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's incredible. But like it's all acoustic instruments usually. It's really cool. So
I'll have to check that out.
Like a lot of the modern bands they'll have in there, and like like Chris Stapleton and like stuff like that. And they've done really good Tiny Desk shows with all those. And then a lot of them are bands you don't know about, but they end up being popular later on. You know? But anyways, you got to watch that. It's amazing.
I will. I will check it out.
Yeah.
I
can't stop watching it. It's like every time I turn it on, I'm like hypnotized.
See, I'm addicted to what's in my bag, the Amoeba Records one. So
listen to this. She fucked
up and they shone. She left the way to dish their heart. It's all live, you know. Five women in there listening in your ear, me, I'm strong. What was that? Yo, that's dope as hell, man.
Dude, you gotta watch this.
Hey, it looks like it's in a record store.
It's in, it's, I don't know how it started, but in NPR they do it at, like, in their offices or whatever. Like Taylor Swift did it one time.
Really?
Yeah, like they have everybody doing it. It's crazy. But I think, yeah, they've got a lot of really good ones, but all the
hip-hop records in the background, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. But all the hip-hop guys that they do, I love, like, hip-hop with, like, real instruments and stuff, or when they do, like, a, you know, hip-hop acoustic. You know, whatever. Yeah. I love that stuff. But anyways, that's worth seeing. But and everybody was freaking out online about how.
Check it out.
Yeah. So anyways.
Remember Yo MTV Rap when they did it, the unplugged one with the LL Cool J? You probably weren't alive then, though.
I don't know. Probably not.
No.
I was born in 88.
So it was when Mama said, knock you out. He did that album with the band.
Okay. That's
and so I'll never forget LL raises up his arms. And it's full of deodorant. Live on TV. I was like, nice clumps of deodorant there, LL.
Yeah. But, I mean, so I'll go into the story why I don't drink. You want me to tell you the story why I don't drink?
Yes. All right. Come on.
Okay. So I've never drank a drop of alcohol in my whole life. The reason is back in, like, the 30s. Okay. This goes back. Taking you back
Wait.
To the
hold
30s.
A second. You said you were born in 99.
You said you were 35, right?
88. So just listen. You know, so back in like the 30s, I have this, you know, all of my ancestors, all my family. So there's this family farm, right? Mm-hmm. And then you got my whole side of the family. And then you got another whole side of the family. And so we got the Smith family, which is my side, and the Williams family, which is the other side. So they're all linked together by this Mr. Smith, who married a Williams. So anyway, so they're all riding. There's a tobacco farm that they work with.
Mm-hmm.
They're all riding to or from work. I don't know. But my great-grandfather was like a raging alcoholic, and he was driving the truck totally drunk and somehow wrecked the truck. He got hit by a train, and he was the only one who survived.
Oh.
This really happened. It was in North Carolina. It was in like the 30s. So anyways, he lived his whole life in depression and hated himself for it. He had, I guess, like survivor's guilt and all that. And so, like, he was a terrible alcoholic. My grandfather, terrible alcoholic. My dad, terrible alcoholic, really into drugs, all that stuff, until he became, you know, until he had this really enlightening moment where he, became a pastor and, like, turned his life over to it. Now, and then on my mom's side, there's a lot of alcoholics, like, farther down the line, I think, but I don't know. But my dad's always like, you know what? You've got a real addictive personality, so you probably shouldn't touch it. And I do. You see my record collection. Yeah, you see I do have a really addictive personality. I drink coffee, like, 24/7. So from a young age, I always decided I just wasn't going to I wasn't gonna touch it. And then I'm too old to start. You know, I'm too old to start now. I just don't. Now, I guess I don't know what I'm missing, and I don't care. So I got enough addictions, so I don't really ever touch it. But I don't have anything against that at all. Everybody I know, all my friends, everybody drinks, and I'm totally cool with it. It doesn't bother me a bit. I just don't, you know.
I didn't talk about it yet. You get a lot of cool bootlegs in your shop, so.
Yeah, they come around. I got, I don't know. I mean, bootlegs are more common than I originally thought they were when I was younger. You know, like, you know, back in the 70s, you know, there's all these people. It started with Bob Dylan. Mm-hmm. You know, he had
there's all these clubs that were like obsessed with him, and they were tape clubs, and they would trade tapes of like concerts and radio shows. Because even back then, they go on the radio show and play a few songs or whatever. And so people would collect these tapes and pass them around. And one guy was like, "Hey, I'm gonna put these on vinyl." And, you know, they didn't call it on vinyl then; they were just like, "Records." Put this out. Yeah, we put this out. And so he put it out, and then that was the first. It's called Great White Wonder. That was the first bootleg. And then, sorry to give you the whole like Forrest Gump story about bootlegs, but anyways, and so then like people were like, "Oh, that's kind of cool." And so they'd record shows. They'd go in with a tape recorder under their trench coat and record a show. And so, you know, there was all these bootlegs, you know, you had these bootleg manufacturers and wholesalers and stuff. And they would go around to the shops and sell stuff, especially like in New York City and stuff, big cities like that. And so there's this really hilarious video, I don't know if you've ever seen it, of Neil Young walking into a record store and finding his own bootlegs. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, he's so pissed.
Oh, really?
It's great. And he goes to the clerk. He's like, "Hey."
He would be.
"What is it?" Oh, yeah. He would be the worst for that to happen with. But he goes back and he's like, "What's this?" And he's like, "I don't." The guy says, "I don't even listen to music." That's what he said. He's like, he says, "You work at a record store." He's like, "I can't even play records. I have cassettes. I don't even."
Who are you?
Yeah,
yeah. I didn't even realize the guy they're bootleg records.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. There's a lot.
I mean, back in the '80s, there were plenty of bootleg cassettes, but
yeah.
Oh yeah, there's a ton of them. I've got like. Man, I love like Zeppelin bootlegs and stuff because it's a culture all on its own. But there's this one guy named, they called him Mike the Mike, like microphone. Yeah. But they called him Mike the Mike Millard, and he would have the concert staff roll him up to the front of the stage. He was in a wheelchair, but he didn't actually need a wheelchair. He had built his wheelchair as a recording device with two microphones, like one in each armrest, and underneath his butt was a reel-to-reel player, and he had like a blanket that he draped over. So he would go to... Inglewood in California at the Forum, and then he would record all the shows there. So he had like amazing, best possible quality of Zeppelin.
Did you say reel to reel?
Yeah, he had a reel reel recorder under his chair.
So how did he power it up?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I don't know if
reel to reels I've seen are like huge.
Yeah, it was. I've never seen it myself, but that's the story. Wow. And he had like so he'd have the right channel and the left channel, and so when he would mix them together, like the tapes were amazing. He never meant for him to get out. He just wanted them for himself.
For himself, yeah.
And so, like, he had The Who, Led Zeppelin, you know, Clapped, and all these, like, so his recordings are considered the best. Well, like, he lived with his mom. He never got married. She ended up passing away. He commits suicide. And so all the tapes get flooded. There's one called For Badge Holders Only. That was one of his recordings. It's a Led Zeppelin one that's incredible. Keith Moon comes out of the crowd to play a song on drums. It's amazing.
Wow.
And then there's another one called Listen to This Eddie, which is probably my favorite Led Zeppelin bootleg that he recorded. But anyways, legendary bootlegger, never got caught. You know, if you got caught, they'd throw you a beating, and then smash your stuff.
Yeah.
But that's incredible. Cool. Yeah, it's an incredible story. But
What you say his name?
His name was Mike the Mike Millard.
Mike the Mike. Yeah, we'll have to look that up.
Yeah, it's a cool story. But yeah, people did that crap all the time. And sometimes you get a shady sound guy that would just plug in the board, and those were awesome. Like, awesome sound quality, obviously. But there's a few like that I've had, but I probably have.
Yeah, you had posted one day, this was years ago, a bunch of Bruce bootlegs. And I was out of town. I was like, so I showed your post to my mom because I was with my mom at the time. I said, "Which one do you want?" And she pointed at the one that was purple vinyl. I forget which one it was. And I called Javier. I'm like, "Dude, I need you to do me a favor and go to Noble for me." And he did. So mom now owns that record. So
very cool. Yeah, we get collections sometimes that have a lot of bootlegs in it because people would buy them. And like a lot of people wouldn't buy them. They didn't like them, you know, because the sound quality is not great usually. Yeah. But some people were...
That one sounded good. Yeah. I was like, I need to hear this before I let my mama have it. But
yeah.
It was good.
But some people did collect them. Some people don't. But sometimes we'll get collections and we'll be like a bunch of bootlegs in it, which is awesome. Yeah. But anyways. So yeah. And you can sell them now, but back then it was illegal.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
Bootlegs.
So bootlegs are a cool
thing.
People collect all sorts of different stuff.
Mixtapes were illegal because people were making money off that shit.
Yeah.
Half the music we play on this podcast isn't legal, but that's okay.
Uh-oh. But,
we try to play only small clips.
Right.
Small clips. That makes sense. Yeah. But people collect bootlegs, and there's, like, with the record store, people collect all different weird niches and rabbit trails and stuff. Like, sometimes I'll get a bunch of records, and, like, they'll be worth money. I'm like, what is this? Well, who would buy this? Put it out, boom, it's gone. Like, yeah. Somebody, yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, I listened to your podcast about the horrorcore stuff, some of it, yeah. And I was like, I don't know. I've never heard of most of this stuff, yeah. You know, which is weird that, but just, like, you know, you're super into that, and I don't know anything about it.
That stuff I rarely find it on vinyl. You know where I find it is on Whatnot, and people will have it, and they won't. Yeah. Nobody wants to buy it, so I get it for dirt cheap. So I got a Blaze, Your Dead Homie autographed double vinyl on blue vinyl for like $5.
Wow!
And I was like, sweet.
There's a reason why no one wants it.
It's fucking awesome, though. It's
well, I mean, it's worth probably worth more than $5, but Whatnot's kind of a
Blaze. I'm sorry if you're watching, because I'm trying to get you on the podcast. And Ernest is talking shit about you. I'm sorry. He didn't mean that.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, he did. Sorry.
But Whatnot's kind of a wild card. It's kind of crazy. It can go like either way.
It does, yeah. It's funny because when I buy shit, like it'll pop up in the bank account and I'll my wife will say, "What'd you buy off of Whatnot last night?" I'm like, "Oops." I pre-bid and
it
worked.
It's too easy.
Yeah.
It's too easy to do it, you know. But I've got some cool stuff on Whatnot before. But then also I've sold on there, and it's some of it. I kind of stopped doing it a little bit. But sometimes, like one time, I had like a bunch of people in there. You should have more people that are in there. The more bids you're gonna get, like 400 people in there.
Wow.
And I put up this Pink Floyd record that had been on the wall in my shop for like $75 forever, and no one touched it. And I put it on there, and it went for like $618.
Holy shit!
And I was like, "What?" You know. But it's just like people getting a bidding war. It's like I don't know. So Whatnot's crazy. But then sometimes I'll throw something up, and it'll be like a $20 record, and it'll go for $3. I'm like, "What the heck?" You know. So it goes either way. But it's a wild format. So of buying.
I don't think I've ever seen Whatnot.
It's like a live stream auction thing. Yeah. It's pretty cool. I like it.
I'm gonna check it out.
It's fun.
I found out about it because Lars,
Lars Aldridge?
Yeah, Lars Fredrikstein. I can never say his last name right. The guitar player from Rancid. Sells a lot of vinyl on there. And he sells toys and T-shirts and all that stuff, too. So he used to sell them on his – he had a separate Instagram page where he sold all of his shit. And then he started advertising, "I'll be on Whatnot." I'm like, "What is Whatnot?" So I downloaded it. First of all, you can't buy anything from him because everyone play way overpriced. So he'll have like a Rancid single that he signed. It's worth $5, but people are paying $85 because you're right. They start to bid on it, and they end up paying $85.
Well, there's no time. There's no time to look it up.
Right.
So they have to just shoot from the hip, and it's like, you know, when you're that's the kind of the tricky part is that you have to kind of know. But then
a real auction.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you go to a record store, everybody will get a stack of records, and they'll go sit on the couch, and they'll look everything on the Discogs, make sure the price is right, and then they'll go buy what they want to buy. With that, there's just no time to look it up, so you have to guess. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of guesswork, and if you don't know what you're doing, you can overpay. Or if you do know what you're doing, you might get it for less if somebody's like, "I'm not sure, I don't want to take the risk."
That is me. I do not overpay for vinyl anymore. I've learned my lesson.
Yeah.
I've been burned. No, so I've got that. When I was talking about Weezer, I did pay $17 for it, but $5 of that was shipping.
Right.
So I got a deal on the actual record. And then I bought Nelly Hot in Here because for some reason I thought Nelly Hot in Here was from the 90s because I have that 90s gig. Turns out it's from the year 2000.
No one's going to call you on. It's close enough.
No, but it only cost me $5. So I'm like, all right, well, yeah. I still own it. Would I ever buy Nelly Hot in Here on vinyl if I wasn't DJing again? No, but you know.
Yeah. Well, I say when if you're a DJ, you play a lot of.
I gotta have it all.
You don't want to.
Yeah. I have at the house. I have like $25,000 worth of vinyl.
Wow.
It's just I have so much, and I buy shit and forget I buy it. I start going through stacks. I'm like, oh shit, I bought that.
I got two of these.
Yes. So Joe Jackson, the one with the shoes on the cover.
Yeah.
I bought that twice.
Yeah.
I went to go check it in on Discogs. I'm like, oh, already on this.
Oh, right. Oh, wow. Discogs is, man, it's a crazy thing. It's crazy because I always talk bad about people that, like, rely on it so much. But then, like, my Discogs went down. I got locked out of my account. And I was like...
What?
Yeah. Like, so like, they're, like, really cracking down on, like, their, you know, scams and stuff. People okay. running scams. Yeah. And so, like, my account, like, my personal account, I've never sold from it or anything. So, I've never verified the email or whatever. And so, they've been telling me to do it, and I haven't done it, and they locked me out. And I was like, what the heck? And so, like, my whole collection, I got, like, over 5,000 records logged in there.
Wow.
And it took me years to do, you know. Oh, yeah. And then, like, I'm like, And so, I've, like, frantically been, for, like, 2 weeks trying to finally got back into it. But okay. I was like... Man, really upset about that. And I was like, I guess I rely on it probably too much, but it's crazy. Discogs is a crazy thing.
I like it.
Yeah.
Hey, will you play some Black Flag, Black Coffee?
While
I'm hearing it playing in behind us here. That's not Black Flag. That is Black Flag, but it's not Black Coffee. It's just Nervous Breakdown that's playing. Which, if you want to go see Black Flag, they're playing town soon. It's not the original lineup. It's Mike V on vocals, Greg Ginn, which is the original guitar player, and two other dudes that no one fucking knows. They're playing at Amos's, and I believe, I forget who's opening for him, but.
Fishbone.
That'd be awesome. I have something that I call the Joe Strummer rule, all right? 2 weeks before Joe Strummer died, he played Atlanta, Georgia. I didn't go.
Uh-huh.
I should have. He's my idol. I love Joe. I got the Future is Unwritten tattoo on my arm. And I missed it. So ever since that day, I found out he died. I don't miss shows anymore. But unfortunately, nowadays, I'm fucking broke. So I got to pick and choose. So.
It's tough. They're so expensive. Yeah, it's crazy.
It is, especially at the fucking Fillmore. You sons of bitches jacking up prices. Punk rock show should not be $50.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of fees and stuff.
Well, not only that, but you get in there, and they still gouge you for everything else.
Yeah. If I go, I just don't drink. Because a drink and a shot is $20. And it's a tall boy can that you can buy for $3 at the fucking gas station. So, yeah.
Well, like Amos.
Yes, that's where... Black Flag's playing. That's where also we're. Who else is coming in that we talked about with whatever? At the Milestone soon, though, we have Off With Their Heather coming back again, as well as DRI. They're playing there in September. So
that's cool.
It's always nice to see those bigger punk rock groups coming through playing the Milestone.
Very cool.
Awesome place. You got anything coming up soon you want to talk about and promote? I mean, this will be a while before it
just
comes
the label
out,
man. We're, you know, we've got that cooking. I don't really have anything coming up, I guess. I just always putting stuff out. Got a YouTube channel where I talk about records.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Oh, what's your YouTube channel?
It's just Noble Records. You'll find it. Just type in Noble Records, and you'll see my face somewhere, and you can click on that.
Sometimes when I spend my 45s.
Trying to get our own YouTube channel promoted.
Sometimes when I spend my 45s, they get stuck.
Uh-huh.
And the
you mean like a...
The slip mat will move, but the record stops. What should I set my weight at the end?
Dude, I don't know. I don't mess with 45s much. But I don't know. I mean, I think what's a 1.5 is like the standard, I think. I'm not sure.
I have both of my turntables set up the exact same way. One will spin and the other one will play. So I have to know. I have to have.
Is it the slip mat?
It might be. It's my Corrosion of Conformity slip mat that really slips. So
yeah, that's probably what it is. I don't know. I have no idea.
But it's signed by Pepper, so I'm like, I got to use it.
Yeah, I'm sure if you like, I don't know if you've. I really like the leather slip mats. I don't know if you ever had one, but they're. I like those a lot because, like, when you have the felt ones, there's a lot of, like, residual fuzz that ends up getting on your records. It drives me nuts because you just clean something and you throw it on and you're like, what the heck? And then there's the static and all that stuff. With the leather ones, like the real thin leather, nothing slips, everything's, I just like them more. But
what do you like to use to clean your vinyl?
I have a VPI cleaner, and I just use like half water, half rubbing alcohol. Call it a day.
Okay.
Easy, all right. Okay. Easy peasy. I buy a thing of rubbing alcohol.
Yeah.
And pour half of it in the other half on my head, fill the breast up with water, and then I do.
What
and
do you then, wipe it down with? Do you use
a... It's a vacuum. So, like, there's a brush attachment, and there's a vacuum attachment. Okay. It's just real quick and easy. But a lot of people use, like, Spin Clean, you know. That's like a $75 cleaner. You use, that and a cotton T-shirt, you know.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people don't clean their records. It's fine.
I have a few that I need to clean before I spend for this upcoming gig.
Yeah.
Just found out the gig I'm doing next Thursday is 70 shit. So I'm like, I gotta go clean some fucking records.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Just buy a 70s comp, and then take the night off. Throw it on.
Yeah,
I'm joking.
No, I actually have a lot of old stuff. I inherited my stepdad's collection when I moved down here, but he recently got back into vinyl, so he came and took a bunch of stuff away. I was like, don't take the Beach Boys one away. I was listening to that. He's like, no, it's mine, man. I'm like, it was yours anyway. So anyways, that's it for this week. Thank you, Dylan, for coming on the show, man.
Yeah,
it was
man.
Great. Noble Records, they are off of Independence in Matthews. You got to be on the right side of Independence to get to them. So it's in the same parking lot as that big church.
Elevation. South 21.
Yeah.
It's got a good burger next door.
Yeah. So.
You know, we got stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool, man.
Thanks for Adios. Having me.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
A huge shout out to our gracious host, Tommy's Pub. Located at 3124 East Wade Drive, Tommy's Pub is a small neighborhood bar that's big on music and community. Go to Tommy's Pub's Facebook page where they regularly provide updates about upcoming events to include weekly open mic night, karaoke, and live music from some of the best up-and-coming bands in the Queen City. Thank you, Tommy's Pub, for hosting M-Vibes Podcast.
We have a lot of interesting episodes coming up about music's most interesting topics, but we want to hear from you and what episodes you'd like to hear. If you have an idea for anything we should talk about, email us at mvibespodcast@gmail.com. This episode was produced by BWM Productions. If you like our podcast, please help us by rating and reviewing us on your favorite listening platform. And follow us on Instagram and Facebook at mvibespodcast. Come on and join in the conversation.